Please rise. Your report was in session with the Honorable Judge Morris presiding.
Be seated. All right, we're back on record. You may proceed with your quest with the cross.
Your Honor, may I approach? I brought up the same part of the deposition that Mr. Cole previously read to, and I want him to read the rest of it into the record.
This is page 26 of the deposition on February 7, 2012.
Could you read the highlighted part there?
Sure. The motion to suppress is for trial. What evidence gets presented at trial? I could have filed a motion to suppress your statement at trial, but you fired me, number one. So I didn't. And you had the opportunity with Mr. Robinson. He, if anybody, was going to file it because you wanted a trial. It was Mr. Robinson.
And does that appear to be a correct statement of practice? Even today?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I want to make sure that it's clear for the record. The deal that you worked out for Mr. Haig back in 2004, it was for the final deal. Because there was a lot of talk about a deal from 1 to 3 year suspension and the plane being forfeit. But then it sounded like the final deal was a 1 year, just a 16-month suspension, and the plane being forfeit. Is that right?
Yes.
And when I say the plane, I mean the plane that was used in the commission of the offenses.
PA-12, yes.
PA-12. And was there an agreement that the fines and jail time as part of that deal would not be more than the amount that would trigger an automatic revocation of 5 years?
Yes.
Okay. So that was a very favorable deal for those offenses, wasn't it?
In my opinion, I thought it was a miracle, frankly.
And I should clarify, when I say favorable, I mean favorable to Mr. Haig.
Yes. I saw his position as a guide. I saw the crimes. I saw what I thought was a significantly negative impact on predator control. I foresaw a lot of bad things, and I wanted to help Mr. Haig. I mean, I know he hates me to this day, but my intention always was all along to help him and to put him in the best position to be back and be a guide. And so I worked out what I thought was a very good deal that would put him guiding. He would miss essentially one fall season and one spring season and would have been back guiding the following fall.
Just let me ask one question. I know that this deal you just discussed would have been a fine and a jail sentence below the triggering. But just to be clear, if it had been above the triggering numbers, what was triggered?
The trigger is, in those days, it was AS08-54-605. And what it said was, if you received a sentence of more than 5 days on any one count, then you lost your privilege to apply for a guide license for 5 years. And if you received a sentence more than an unsuspended sentence of $1,000, then you lost your privilege to apply for 5 years. So they didn't actually take away your guide license, but what they did is they prevented you from being up for applying and getting your guide license because you have to apply.
Right, but bottom line, you lose your ability to guide for 5 years. That would be the negative consequence if the threshold.
It was a terrible statute, and it was very onerous in the statute, and it was hard to negotiate.
And you can't, so this is worth delving into a little deeper. Your guide license is what allows guides obviously to guide, but it's also what allows guides to advertised to guide, right?
Well, yes, you can't.
You can't do anything without it.
You can't do anything without it, and that's why we negotiated even before the hunting season. I negotiated it so David was going to be able to begin advertising and taking contracts on July 1st, which was 2 months before the guide season was supposed to start. That way, because when I talked to him, it was like, well, if you run it through September, he won't be able to get any clients. It'll be another wasted year. So we negotiated it so that his guide license would commence. He would be able to get his guide license and use it beginning July 1st, 2005, is my recollection.
Okay. And the five-year revocation period, the five-year period that he couldn't renew his guide license, he also wouldn't be able to advertise during that time. So any business that he built up is basically done at that point, right?
Right.
And the deal that you worked out for him had him back to advertising within a few months of the time that the deal would have been accepted, from September until July of the following year?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. And I will say it had one other advantage, and that is if you negotiate a suspension with the criminal case, in other words, no matter what it is, if you negotiate it with the state, then the Big Game Commercial Services Board can't come back in an administrative action and take away your guide license.
Well, that's another part to this that hasn't really been brought up. So even if by some, you know, well, let me ask you, was there any possibility, given the types of sentences that are meted out in these kinds of offenses, in a same-day airborne type of predator control case, that he was getting less than a $1,000 fine or 5 days in jail?
I had a case, and the reason I hesitated earlier, but it was an assistant guide who was maybe the nicest guy you'd ever meet. I had 50 letters, and what he did is, he was out with a client, and his wife was back at camp, and the guy shot a very small bear. And the guy, the assistant guide, made a mistake, and they tagged it as being shot by the wife. And then they went out, and the troopers came in and ended up finding that was false. So, but he had 30 years of a stellar. And we went in open sentencing, and Judge Teresi just looked at us and said, your guy's a great guy, but I give $2,500 fines routinely every day on DUIs, on, you know, everything. Your guy's getting $2,500 fine, and he lost his guide license for 5 years. Even though, you know, we had a very good, sympathetic person who was, you know, a good person. I'm not saying David wasn't either, but the fact is, a $1,000 fine in those days was nothing on fish and game things. And I had represented people, many people, guides, that had lost their licenses for worse things, and some not so worse. So I knew what the risk was going into this.
So having established that, even if by some happenstance he didn't get a fine in excess of $1,000 or jail time in excess of 5 days, the Big Game Commercial Services Board still could have looked at what he did and revoked his guide license, right?
Absolutely.
But what you just said was, and I believe the statute is still says this to this day, that if the court imposes any suspension, the guide board is bound by that suspension.
That's correct.
They can't impose a separate suspension.
That's
so
why we negotiate all these, and we always have negotiate them at the same time.
What's the name of the thing? Big Game Guide Board?
The Big Game Commercial Services Board. And so did that, knowing that even regardless of what the sentence was, that then the guide board would almost certainly take action. Is that your view?
Well, I will tell you, it was in the back of my mind, but frankly, he was going to lose. He was going to get more than a $1,000 fine for killing six wolves out of the area. He was going to lose his guide license for 5 years. If he had walked in there, pled guilty, they would have imposed more than a $1,000 fine. Hypothetically, you're right, but it was going to happen if we didn't do something.
Right. Okay, so there was talk about the credit received for the amount of time that he'd voluntarily given up his guide license. Is that something standard that you work out in defending guiding cases?
So I've been thinking about that, but yes, it is. But so it was always understood that he was going to lose his guide license for at least a year. And so to me, it made sense to start early. So, and that's why even if we had done the original sentencing 1 to 3, I was comfortable in arguing, hey, he's already taken off this year and you should impose it. And I didn't believe Scott Leaders was going to have any problem with that at the time. When we actually did the deal, we said it's going to be 16 months. He's going to be able to come back July 1st. So, yes.
So that amount of time that he'd already given up was part of the deal that you worked out that Mr. Haig rejected. Is that right?
Ultimately, yes.
And your February 7, 2012 deposition has come up a couple times. You were asked that question, why he didn't get credit for that year, several months at that point. And do you remember what your answer was?
No, I don't. I can only say I don't know why. I don't know whether they argued it or anything. I was out of the picture at that point.
Right. No, I'm... May I approach?
Yes.
This is page 11 of that same deposition. And the question Mr. Haig posed was, how come I never got credit for that, though? Refresh your recollection.
Because you didn't take the deal, David. If you'd taken the deal, you would have gotten credit. You decided not to take the deal.
Yeah. So,
but even there, he still had the opportunity to argue that in front of the judge. I mean, he could have argued that. The judge had the authority to make it, give him credit for that. But really, again, he was going to get 5 years.
Because of the fine.
Because he got convicted and the fines and everything else.
Yeah, and it really would have been largely irrelevant at that point because the fines were such that it triggered the 5-year period in which he couldn't reapply for a guide license.
Right.
And that would, when I say the fines, I mean the fines were imposed at sentencing post-trial.
Right.
Okay, so...
Well, is there something in the statute that precludes him from... yes, he gets a 5-year suspension, but is there anything that precludes the judge from starting it prior to the conviction date?
Yeah, I believe the statute... Well, Mr. Cole, does the statute read that you can't apply for a guide license for 5 years?
Yes.
Okay. So you said because you rejected the deal.
Wait. What I'm understanding is the practice, at least in the fish and game community, legal community, the interpretation of that statute is that it is a prospective prohibition?
No. We could negotiate it because we were not going to be under ASO 8.
But if there was if you go to trial, you get sentenced, you roll the dice, it's open sentencing, you get the...
I think you got to follow the statute.
Right, and you think that everybody agrees that the the statute triggers the 5 years at conviction or at sentencing. You can't get this. You can't go backwards like you were
right.
Like you could have done in a negotiation.
I think that's right.
Okay.
And the current statute is a little different. It changed in the mid-late 2000s. Is that right?
Yeah.
To a graduated system where the amount of the fine determines the number of months in which you can't reapply for a guide license.
Right. $2,500 fine. 5 days is 24 months. Then $3,500 is 36. And $5,000, it goes to 5 years. Something like that.
Now, when you said at the deposition, because you didn't take the deal, specifically, what actions did Mr. Haig undertake that, you know, manifested that decision, wherein you understood that to be his decision?
He fired me and said he wanted a trial.
Now, there was some talk about Mr. Leader's charging document. Was when the evidence first came out, I think you said it was in April, that the troopers served the search warrants and had the evidence that Mr. Haig committed these offenses.
Yeah.
Or was it in the spring of 2004?
It was in the spring. It was in April of 2004.
And they didn't file charges immediately, the Attorney General's office.
No.
Okay, were you involved in any discussions trying to persuade them to not file charges immediately?
That was the whole idea. That's why we reached that agreement. He got to do his bear hunts. He agreed to come in and give a statement. And then we were going to exchange discovery without filing of a document. We were going to negotiate it. And I really wanted time to go by before we sat down, because it was kind of an emotional thing. I will say that I wish Scott Leaders had been a little bit more timely, because David wanted to get it taken care of. I wanted to get it taken care of. And, you know, we went for a number of months where we didn't hear anything. But ultimately, it started up again in August, and I thought we had it worked out.
And the fact that Mr. Leaders didn't file the charges right away meant that, you know, he wouldn't be able to argue for bail conditions that Mr. Haig not be in the field, though. Isn't that right?
That was all part of it.
Okay. All right. And so, was there ever a deal that would have allowed Mr. Haig to plead open with the 1 to 3 year guide license suspension and the plane not be forfeit?
No. I don't believe so, because that's why David came to me and said, I want the opportunity to get that plane back. The only way that could happen was through an open sentence deal, which I repeatedly told him not to do.
Okay. When did he come to you with that counteroffer term? In relation to when the sentencing was scheduled to take place?
Look, it's been 17 years, but I believe it was in 2 to 3 weeks of September when the arraignment ended up happening. I think most of this happened within 2 to 3 weeks to 4 weeks, middle to late August, September.
And Mr. Was it after that counteroffer was made to exchange the other plane, the Super Cub, I think you said, that Mr. Leaders filed the amended charging document?
No.
Okay. How?
No, that happened in November. That happened after we were – okay, so the first deal that we worked out was 1 to 3 years and forfeiture of the plane. And I think that happened in, like, August. The next – thing was, David was not happy with losing the plane, and he wanted the opportunity. And I kept telling him, David, the judge is going to forfeit this plane. You shot wolves illegally out of it. That's the instrument that you used to engage in illegal conduct. They're going to forfeit it. And he was insistent, and he asked me about that, or I suggested the only way you're going to get that is if it's in an open sentence, and he asked me about that, and that's what I asked Scott Leaders. Originally, he said yes. And then shortly, but I don't remember things quite the way David does on this. I thought I told David before the sentencing or before the change of plea that they weren't going to agree to an open sentencing. And all the witnesses were there because we were going to argue the 1 to 3 years. Then Leaders called me up and said, we're not going to do that. I thought I told that to David. David was not happy. He was still not happy when we were meeting in September. The arraignment was the next day. And then I called up Leaders and we made a new deal.
A deal that was even more favorable to Mr.
It was even more favorable. That was the deal that we've talked about, which is 16 months. But he had to forfeit his plane. But we worked out all the terms. Mr. Leaders filed the amended charge. And if you look at it, what it does is it just cites a different big game guide violation. But the amended charge made it a minimum 3-year suspension.
Was that for same day airborne?
Yeah.
That's the. Okay.
And so, that's just my recollection. And then we did the change. We did the hearing. We were going to set it on for a change of plea. We just pled not guilty. We were going to set it on for a change of plea. And then David wasn't happy with the situation. I kept trying to work on it. Then later in October, November.
Just stop there because I'm a little bit confused about that. The second deal, which was a 16-month suspension retroactive to, I mean, that would begin at the date of the killing.
Right.
And forfeit the plane. And then you said he filed this amended charge that referred to a statute that required a 3-year suspension. So had do you believe that Leaders reneged on the deal or had Haig rejected the deal? I mean, was that
the
deal too?
Being
the 16-month
okay.
With the plane forfeit.
He did not withdraw that deal, the 16-month.
Right.
What he withdrew was open sentence.
Right, but he filed this charge, you said, that referred to a 3-year suspension.
He filed that, I think, so that we couldn't come in and plead guilty right there and then be subject to between one and, or just plead open sentence. Because he told me he didn't want to get into a dispute over the airplane.
So he was blocking the defendant just walking in and saying, guilty, boom.
Right.
And
now we got to go open sentence on everything.
Right. And so, but is it your understanding that despite his filing that, the 16-month offer was still valid?
Oh, yeah. We were just going to amend the charge. Because I think David even asked me about that. Why aren't we amending the charge? It might be on the tape. I can't remember. It was right at the end. And I just said, we'll work it out. It's going to get done. Because I understood we had a deal. That night, everybody was happy we didn't go to McGrath because we had worked it out. He was going to get his guide license back in 16 months. He was very happy with that. He was going to be back in business. It took away a lot of the uncertainty about going in front of a judge.
I'm sorry I'm being so obtuse. What changed after you thought you'd cut the deal?
I mean, it really had to do with the airplane.
That's when he said, I want to substitute the airplane.
He didn't want to forfeit the plane.
At all.
He didn't really want to forfeit.
The
PA-12. He was willing. He was very happy. You know, it's like everybody, right? I got him the license suspension down to 16 months, and he was, you know, ecstatic in my recollection. But what was bothering him is he couldn't get his plane back. And originally we agreed to it, but or that That's my recollection. We had a deal. And then once he got the license revocation, he turned to, well, I want to get my plane back. And that's what started it. And then there was the doubt about, you know, filing the motions, the deal we had, why can't we do that? And in my mind, I was like, David, we got a deal. Why do you want to do all these things? If I file the motions to get this deal back and you lose, you're getting no deals then. Now we're going to be stuck in open sentencing if you want to plead. We'll get nothing. Why do you want to do that?
So the original charges that were filed, were they a result of a pre-charge negotiation? Because he wasn't originally charged with guiding, being a guide and committing a same-day airborne. He was charged with being a guide and committing a wildlife offense, which has a lower minimum
sentence. If you look at it, I'm pretty sure that the penalties at that time for that charge, the original one, was 1 to 3.
But,
and we were going to argue 1 to 3. I said, you know, I was trying to get him to come down on the 3, but he was going to argue 3, and I was going to argue 1. And I was like, well, we've already got through the fall of 2004. We'll get through just the spring now. And, you know, if I'm right, I was a little worried he'd get 2, you know, how it is. Yeah. You argue 1, and the state argues 3, and the judge cuts it in the middle. And I was a little worried about that, but it was worth the risk because we had mitigated. I was worried he was going to get 5 years from the beginning. So now we're down to a good chance of cutting that in at least in half.
And then you ultimately did get that deal.
16 months.
For 16 months. After that, Mr. Haig came back with the counteroffer to swap the other plane and forfeit the Cub.
I don't know how you characterize it, but he wanted me to inquire about swapping the Cub.
That's a different term for Rule 11, isn't it?
There was a deal on the table. Nobody changed their plea.
Right.
I thought David agreed to it. I thought we were good, but it didn't get closed. I mean, I never set it on for a change of plea because we kept working. He kept going on about the plane. And what about the plane? And I want to go open sentence on the plane. And so we were...
And the state wouldn't agree to that, right?
The state wasn't agreeing to that.
So there was no meeting of the minds on that question.
No.
And there was...
And so then he
I call it a counterproposal. You can call it something else. But he came back with a different term and said, I want to forfeit this other plane, right?
Yep.
Okay. And Mr. Leaders didn't agree to that. And then you were fired. And it went on from there. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, a guide that commits a wildlife offense fulfills the elements of a guide committing a wildlife offense under Title 8 for 0854-720, right?
I think so.
I mean, the statute says if a guide commits a wildlife offense, here's the penalty.
Yep.
And it's any wildlife offense, state or federal, even if it's just an ordinance. Is that right?
That's what I was always afraid of, yep.
And killing wolves, however, isn't a violation. I mean, it could be, but killing wolves from an airplane is same-day airborne, killing big game, right?
Yes.
And that's the same classification as a guide crime that he was ultimately convicted of, a Class A misdemeanor.
Yep.
If it's done negligently. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Did you ever tell Mr. Haig that if he talked to the trooper and the prosecutor, that he could never be prosecuted for anything that he talked to them about?
No.
And I think you already said this, but my last question is, I just want to make sure it's clear. You believe that Mr. Leaders filed the guide same day airborne charges, so Mr. Haig didn't just come in and plead as charged and leave it completely up to the court in effort to get his plane back. Is that right?
Yes.
So that charge is available to the state, but because of your pre-charging negotiations, it wasn't initially charged.
Right.
Okay. Nothing further.
Just one other thing. You just answered that you never told Mr. Haig that he had that he could never be prosecuted. Let me back up. You never told him that if you give this statement to the state very early on, you could never be prosecuted for anything. You never told him that.
I don't know.
Okay.
I wouldn't have said that.
And did you tell him something about if you give the statement itself can't be used?
You know, it didn't really come up, Judge. I will tell you, at the time, we were in damage control. And the only way that I could see David getting out of this is if he cooperated and we made a deal. And so I don't recall ever talking to him or it coming up. I do know that I wrote a letter saying he had King for a day.
Your hope was that, I mean, that there wasn't any sort of official use immunity agreement, but you thought that cooperation would further your subsequent negotiations.
It would further keeping him in business. It would further charges not being filed at the time. It would further a resolution favorable and a negotiation, which ultimately we achieved.
And not merely guide theoretically, but to fulfill his commitments to the 6, 7, 8 clients who were already scheduled.
It was a big deal at the time. It was huge.
To him?
To him and his wife. They had taken in approximately $20,000 for each person. And as a guide, you go and you spend that money getting everything ready, or you spend a lot of it. So giving it back, I mean, I didn't know this for sure, but I knew this is what it was. It was a big deal.
Okay. Mr. Haig, do you have any additional questions for?
Nope.
Nope. All right. He may be excused?
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Make sure you bring whatever you've got a document. Is that... That's just your notes? Okay, that's fine.
This is what he gave. I think that's what
we'll give it back to him then.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Haig, your next witness?
Chuck Robinson, Martha Run. I don't know where he's at.
I don't know where he is, so we'll have to see outside. You said Mr. Robinson's outside? Robinson, if you come on up to the witness stand, please.
Thanks.
How you doing?
And sir, if you'd remain standing and raise your right hand. You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you'll give now before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I affirm.
Thank you. You may be seated. And for the record, please state your name, spelling both first and last name.
Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R,
Robinson,
R-O-B-I-N-S-O-N.
Thank you.
Mr. Haig, let me make a disclosure. In, I think, 81 and 82, I lived in Kenai and worked as a public defender. Mr. Robinson was an attorney back then there, and I don't know if I ever worked on a case with him with a co-defender or anything like that, but, you know, he was a criminal defense lawyer. I was a criminal defense lawyer. we knew each other. I don't think I ever went to his home. I didn't socialize with him other than maybe, I don't know, a beer after work, maybe occasionally, but, you know, we were acquaintances. And then in 1990, I believe, then Governor Cooper appointed Mr. Robinson to the State Reapportionment Board. At the time, the governor appointed the five members of the Reapportionment Board. Then there was an executive, and Mr. Robinson was one of the five. Then there was an executive director, a gentleman by the name of Mike Bradner. And then I was hired by the Department of Law. I, at the time, was a public defender. I was hired by the Department of Law as an assistant attorney general to give legal advice to the Reapportionment Board. That probably lasted a little under a year. Before the reapportionment census work could actually be done, we were doing preparation for it, could actually be done, Governor Hickel was voted in, and Governor Hickel replaced all the members of the Reapportionment Board, took me off of that assignment. I was uninterested in doing what they offered me in the Department of Law. I left the Department of Law. So for that year, I would, okay, let me add one thing. The board went on trips. They would have hearing in Anchorage, had hearing in Fairbanks, had a hearing in Barrow, Nome, a whole bunch of places. And I would travel with the board. And usually at the beginning of a hearing, I would give some summary of the Voting Rights Act, the general law of reapportionment to the members of the public. And Mr. Robinson attended, I don't know, if not all of them, most of those hearings. And I would interact with him. So.
And that, can I disqualify and that ended you for in, that then?
Can you what?
Can I disqualify you for that then?
You can make that motion if you wish.
I'd like to.
Okay, the motion's denied.
Okay.
So, and then let me just file. I think I left Kenai and I was only there for a little less, I think 11 months. So I've been living in Anchorage since 82, 83. And never, I don't think I worked on another case, with the exception of my work on the reapportionment board.
Well, all I know is in this case, I found out that attorneys and lawyers and judges have a very tight-knit community, and they do almost anything they have to protect each other. And I mean, there's been sworn testimony.
You can make those accusations, but if you're talking about me, and if you're talking about my relationship with Mr. Robinson, I've explained my relationship.
Okay. Well, I understand, and I'm just saying that I
you're suspicious.
Don't want any, you know, any connection means. You know, so anyway, you've denied it. Can I get going, or?
I would love to have you get going.
Okay. Mr. Robinson, did you represent me for a trial and appeal from around December 10th, 2004, to about April of 2006?
I did represent you. I'm not sure of the exact date. So
well, we could look at your billing. We could, if your billing statements kind of show that, you'd agree to it.
Do you have some billing records he could look at?
Yeah, because I don't have any of your files there. I destroyed all my files after 7 years of retiring from the practice of the law, and that would have been as of January of 2018.
Well, I don't.
I mean, I'm not. I said I did represent you. Just
okay. Okay, that's good enough.
Dates and not.
Did you file a pretrial discovery request while you represented me?
Yeah.
Was it violated?
In what way?
Did you ask for anything that would be used against me at trial to be given a copy of it to you before trial?
I believe, Mr. Haig, what I did in your cases, I did in all of my criminal cases, is that I sent a standard broad request to the district attorney's office to reveal to me any and all evidence that it had in its possession regarding the charges against you. So I sent them a letter.
Yes. Okay. Is it true that they used a map against me at trial that you and I never got a copy of before trial?
I learned that later.
Okay, but that in fact did happen, that you made a request for this map, which was used, and I don't know, do you want to look at it?
It may help me to remember something I don't know.
Okay, Your Honor, can I go up and show them this map?
Sure.
So if I understand your testimony, yes, they used a map, and you learned later something about it? Yeah, okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
And this is a copy of a map used against this trial. Did we get this, something like this, before trial, you and I?
I remember we got a map. It's going to be very difficult for me to tell you all the details about the map, but as what I understood the map to represent was an area in which the state was claiming you had taken wolves without permission. That's what I thought the map was supposed to represent.
Okay, but the map that they used against us at trial, you're saying that they gave us a copy of that map before trial?
No, what I'm saying is that the purpose of requesting evidence would include any geographical evidence like a map in which they were using to claim where the alleged crime took place.
Okay, and so your testimony is that you made that request, but they never gave you something like this?
Not that I recall, Mr. Hayes.
Okay, and do you remember that they did use this against me at trial? And if you notice, it says prosecution exhibit number 25.
I do remember that at trial, there was an exhibit from the state, which was a map, which was used on their part to prove or try to prove that you had taken wolves in a certain area.
Yeah.
What does that have a state trial exhibit number on it?
Yes, state trial exhibit number 25. And so,
Go ahead. Ask the next question.
So, is it true that yes, discovery request was violated because you didn't get a copy of this prior to trial as your discovery request requested?
Well, I'm not sure that, if my memory serves me well, there were several smaller maps that were provided by the state, or at least some. In other words, some area where this alleged crime took place. That particular map that you're using to ask me a question about, all I can say is that they brought a map to court.
Yeah, a bigger map, a far bigger map than anything.
Map. Yeah, a way bigger.
And this, Your Honor, isn't actually full size. It's actually even bigger than this. And we never got a copy. It's true that we never got
down,
a copy.
Slow down.
Okay. You've got State Exhibit 25. Yep. Was State Exhibit 25 offered and used at trial?
Yes.
And yet you're telling me that there is a different map that was used at trial?
No, this is a copy of the map used against me at trial. We finally got this 8 years after trial.
But the thing you have in your hand,
huh?
The thing you have in your hand was not the actual exhibit used at trial. It's a copy of it.
Yes.
Okay. And the exhibit used at trial, you're telling me, was not provided to the defense in advance of trial?
Correct.
Okay, is that your recollection, sir?
My recollection, Your Honor, is this. We were provided discovery. We got the court. A map was introduced in court alleging where the alleged crime took place. I didn't know at that time that what was introduced in court was different than some other map that they produced later on. That's the point I made.
Okay. And is it true that, is it also true that there was a tape recording of prosecutor leaders Trooper Gibbons and state witness Zellers that was not provided, and that tape recording captured those people discussing how no wolves were killed in my guide unit, game management unit 19C guide area, and how their map had been falsified to prove this?
I don't recall hearing any audio tape where anybody admitted to falsifying anything. The tape that I heard, as best as my memory can serve me, were interviews of Mr. Zeller about what had happened between you and him when you guys were trapping wolves. I don't remember Mr. Hegg hearing either Mr. Leaders or the troopers say we are lying or this is false information. I don't recall.
Okay. Fairly recently, did we have a...
Mr. Hegg, wait, let me interrupt you. I don't want to leave the map question quite yet because I'm still not sure I understand the point. And let me summarize what I think you're trying to get across, and if I'm misstating it, tell me, because I don't want to be confused. There's no question that a map called Exhibit 25 was introduced at trial against you, right there. And what you have in front of you is a smaller copy of the actual trial exhibit, okay? You're right? Am I right so far?
Correct.
Where is the actual trial Exhibit 25? Was that,
I believe the state still has it.
Was that part of the record in front of the Court of Appeals?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So in theory, it still exists as far as you
yeah.
know.
Yeah. At the oral arguments to the Court of Appeals, the state brought in the actual map, and it was used
so
on an east.
At least at that point, it existed.
Yes.
All right. And now just wait, let me follow up. Your point about the alleged discovery violation is that you're saying that you hadn't seen this giant larger thing until trial itself.
Correct.
Okay. Was there a smaller version of the trial exhibit provided to you in advance of trial?
No, not to Mr. Robinson either. No, no map that was a aeronautical chart was provided.
Is that accurate from your recollection, Mr. Robinson?
How far back was it, 2004?
Right. No, I appreciate it. But, do you remember anything about... You know, like being at trial and saying, where did this thing come from?
What I don't recall is I don't recall during the receipt of discovery from the state there was any discrepancy between any maps that I received in discovery and what they produced at trial. I didn't know there was a different map.
Okay, no one's established to me that there's actually a different changed map yet, but you don't, whatever you saw at trial was consistent with what you had been given in advance,
right.
Even though the size of the thing was...
I had no reason to believe there was some different depiction than what was in Exhibit 25.
Okay. And
but did you?
I'm not an attorney. Anyway,
when you get this giant map at trial, the larger version of 25, do you recall thinking, geez, I've never seen this thing before?
No. I didn't know there was anything different not to see is what I'm saying.
But you'd gotten in discovery
right.
something that you thought was what they were using at trial.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Well, there was nothing in discovery like this, at least, and I got...
Well, he just said there was.
Well, I'm telling you that we got his file, and there was nothing like this ever. And the reason why I'm so adamant about this is when I finally...
Ask him questions.
Okay. Is it true that I've shown you this map and shown you a copy of the boundaries that are on this compared to the official fish and game boundaries, and that this map is in fact false? And I believe corruptly altered the game management unit boundaries to prove the wolves were killed in my guide area when in fact they weren't. Have we discussed this and you admitted that this map was false?
We discussed it. You alleged it was false, and my response was that if it was false, I had known about it at the time of trial, we'd have brought it up as an issue. That's what we discussed.
Okay. And did I show you that, in fact, the map was false?
You showed me what you say are differences between what was shown and what was hidden.
Okay. And, in fact, was that, was what was falsified, was that, did the falsification make it seem, corruptly make it seem like the wolves were killed in my guide area?
Well, I don't know what you mean by corruptly, but...
Wrongly, erroneously.
Well, it turned out that, in fact, the wolves that the state said were taken in a certain area were taken in another area.
Yep. And this map helped the state prove that.
That map or the one, or Exhibit 25?
Exhibit 25.
Exhibit 25 was used for the purpose of trying to show where the wolves were taken.
Correct. And this is a copy of Exhibit 25, and I showed you a copy of this, and it, in fact, is false. So, in other words, if this one's false, because it's a copy that I, this is a copy I got from the state's map is false also. That's, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Well, wait a minute. If I'm understanding what Mr. Robinson just said, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the state used trial Exhibit 25 at trial to prove the location of the criminal taking, the alleged criminal taking. And at no time during trial did Mr. Robinson say, Mr. Hague say to you, that map is fake, it's been changed, and the issue of the alleged corrupted map never came up at trial?
No.
Okay. So then, after trial, Mr. Hague, at some point, did he come to you and say, hey, I think this thing is wrong or altered?
No, actually, I didn't hear from Mr. Hague about that issue until he got involved in these.
Yeah, like a year from now. It took us 8 years before we finally got a copy that we could look at and found out.
Okay, so 8 years ago would have been, you said 8 years ago from today, so we're, you know.
8 years after my conviction.
Okay, so conviction in 2005?
Yeah.
So somewhere around 2013?
Yeah.
Where do you get this thing?
Huh?
Where do you get this thing?
I get it, Judge Bauman. Realizing all the crap that went on in my case, I finally, you know, we got some of this stuff. I finally realized I should go look at the map that was used against me at trial. And so I filed a motion with Judge Bauman. He ordered the state to produce the map. And he ordered the state to give him the original map and to give me a copy. Well, then the state never gave me a copy. I ended up going into the Kenai courthouse and looking at the original map that was in Judge Bauman's possession.
In 2013.
Yeah, and I'm not positive. It's when Judge Bauman was presiding over my case.
Ballpark of 2013, you're in front of Judge Bauman trying to get access to
the map.
Exhibits, and it's during the course of that proceeding that you get the map.
Okay. A copy, yeah.
And you look
and
at it.
And I don't actually get a copy. I end up having to go in and look at
the
original one that was in Judge Bauman's possession, realized that it had been falsified make this a guide case.
You think it's been falsified?
Yep.
After your 2013 inspection?
Yep.
And sometime after then, 2013, 2014, you'd go to Mr. Robinson and go, here's this thing I've discovered. I think the map is wrong.
Yeah, and I asked, why didn't we get a copy of this before trial so we could find out before trial it had been falsified? And Mr. Robinson told me they never gave us a copy of this before trial so we could find out it had been falsified.
Okay, what makes you think, just so I'm clear, what makes you think it's falsified?
Because there is a game management unit boundary that has been altered like 20 or like 20-some miles.
So if I look on this map, can you show me the alteration?
Yes.
Show it to me.
This
sort of an orange
thing?
Yeah,
and I drew this in because when they gave me a copy...
So hold on. The orange lines you added
I highlighted what the state had so we could see it on a black and white copy.
The orange is what you added.
Yes.
All right. Go ahead.
They had a line. This was the line they used at trial. This is my lodge, and I died in 19C. This is my lodge. This is where the wolves were killed. And they gave this to my jury saying, see, and Dave Hague killed all the wolves in his guide area to benefit his guide business, when in fact, if you look at the Fish and Games boundary, the boundary should have been here. The green is the real boundary, and I can prove that. This is from online with Fish and Game. And how I did this is I took Sparabon Air Force Base and Lime Village, and if you draw a line through it, it goes right through the wolves.
Okay, just so I'm clear here.
So this is Sparabon.
Hang on.
And this is Lime Village.
Hang on. What I'm trying to understand is this thing here accurately represents what was used at trial.
Correct.
Right. And you think the labels of the units, the boundaries of the units.
Yes.
And you think that the trial exhibit used inaccurately described the game units.
Yes. The one used against me at trial has the orange, when in fact the real boundary, the orange should have went through here where the green is. And what it did they looped out around to put these wolves in my guide area because I was not allowed to guide here. And this is the whole key, Your Honor.
But
19D, I'm not allowed to guide. Sorry. Okay.
Step back.
Okay.
All the way back.
Okay.
Mr. Hague, help me out. Did you look at the map at trial?
No.
Why not?
I was so scared, Your Honor, because my career, my livelihood was at stake, and I hired Mr. Robinson, and I trusted him to do a good job for us, and I did not ever look at this map at trial.
Did they give you a map prior to trial that showed where the wolves were and where the game unit was?
No.
So you knew that the map at trial was new because you'd never seen a map that depicted the game unit and the location of the wolf?
Yeah.
So you knew at trial, you yourself knew that this was a brand new map that had never been provided to you.
Well, and let me rephrase this. Okay.
Answer my question.
I had actually seen the map before at trial. And this is very important, and please bear with me.
The question, I'm not getting an answer.
This map was used during my statement for the plea negotiation, and I'm the one that put all the wolf kill locations on it. But see, since it's an aeronautical chart, since it's for airplanes, you know, that's what all these lines are. These are airways for flying. The state then, after I put the wolf kill locations on it for my plea, you know, during plea negotiations, they then hand drew the boundary on by hand. And so...
Just hang on. Slow down.
Okay.
So you're telling me that the location of the wolf kills that's depicted on trial 25, you put on during when you gave the statement to the troopers?
Yes. And see, that's a whole nother violation. And so this map
Slow down.
Is...
Slow down.
Okay. Yes.
Did you keep a copy of the map that you... worked on with the troopers?
I did it with Brent Cole, and he said, we don't need anything.
Just you didn't.
But I didn't get a copy.
You didn't keep a copy.
Nope.
Okay. And so, when you at trial, when you're preparing for trial, did you get a copy of a map that showed where the wolf kills were?
Nope.
Why didn't you ask for that? Because you knew it existed because you drew it.
Mr. Robinson did ask for it, and they never gave us one.
Right, but didn't you realize prior to trial that you had drawn this, you know, you'd marked the locations of the wolf kill?
I was so ignorant of the law, Your Honor, I didn't know to ask.
It's not a matter of the law.
I did not ask for it, yes.
But you knew it existed.
Yes, I did.
Because you made it.
Yes.
Nonetheless, knowing that you had created this map where you put the locations of the wolf kill, and you looked at the stuff the state had given you, didn't you recognize that something was missing?
No.
Why not?
I was so scared that I was petrified. My whole life before me was, I mean, I was so scared. I sit there at trial like this.
Well, how about before trial?
We didn't have a copy. I didn't know.
My point exactly. Why didn't you recognize during the course of the preparation for the trial that the map that you had drew on, locating the wolf kill, the most critical piece of information in the whole trial, you drew it, you put it there, where was it?
Your Honor, that's why I hired Mr. Robinson for $50,000.
Did you tell Mr. Cole I drew a map?
He was there when I did it. He told me to put the... And there's a recording of me talking and Brent saying, yeah, Dave, you take a pen, mark it here, mark it there. There's a recording of me doing it.
Okay.
And then at trial,
so,
the state, at the in the state...
And so...
At trial, the recording says the state, yeah, we use this during Dave Hegg's statement, and here's the map. Well, they recorded me putting on it. So not only is this a violation of my right against self-incrimination because I put these on, they falsified it so they could make it a guide crime, and then to cover up, they didn't give Chuck Robinson a copy of it so we could find out that it had been falsified to frame me.
When you put the wolf kill locations on there, was the boundary of the game unit on the map that you were working on?
No.
Okay. They
remember, it was an aeronautical chart with no boundaries. They said it was pristine.
Okay.
So I marked them. And because it's an aeronautical chart...
You know they're handing you a map that you had prepared, and now your memory is jogged, and you said what to Mr. Robinson about where that thing come from? Did you say anything to him?
I did not say anything. I was sitting with my head down. I probably didn't even see the map.
Well, that's
it's hard to see a map when you're going like this, Your Honor. My whole guide career, from 18, I was maybe Alaska's youngest master guide. My whole life was imploding, and I'm sitting there like this. And now I found out that my whole life imploded because they falsified a map, and to boot... They didn't give Mr. Robinson a copy of it before trial, so me and him, in the unstressful conditions of being in his office,
did you testify?
Now we're at trial.
Did you testify at trial?
Yes.
When you testified, did you do anything with the map?
No.
You didn't stand up and point to it? Did you look at it?
No.
Okay. So the summary here is you crafted the map placing the wolf kills. At the time you put the wolf kills on there, the boundaries of the game unit was not there. You knew you had done this map. You did not keep a copy of the map. When you got the pretrial information from the state, you didn't recognize that the map that you had worked on was missing. Then, when at trial... For reasons that, because of your stress and fear and confusion, you don't look at the map and recognize that this is something that had not been provided to you in discovery, even though you did. You also did you recognize that in fact that was the map you worked on?
I don't even remember that.
You don't.
I just know that.
Where did didn't the state testify? Didn't somebody testify? Here's this map. See where the wolf kills are? Mr. Haig told us that.
The state testified that Trooper Gibbons put the wolf kill locations on it. The beauty of it, though, is that at the recording of my interview,
hang on. You're telling me that at trial, the trooper testified that he put the location of the wolf kill on?
Yes.
And did that sound odd to you at the time?
I didn't even make it. I'm sitting there like this.
Well, Mr. Haig, I'm having difficulty understanding why you were so why you were not focused. I mean, you seem
Mr.
Like
Cole
very...
has testified at his deposition. He thought I was going to commit suicide. That's how focused I was.
What was the time period when you thought you were as unfocused at trial? You were unfocused at trial. How far
prior to trial do you think you were in that state?
I'm still in that state, can't you? I mean, that's why I act the way I do.
The reason I'm wondering is because doesn't that suggest that some of your memory about what happened prior to trial is suspect?
Because there's a recording of Trooper Gibbons, prosecutor leaders, me, and Brent Cole, and they're saying, Dave, here's an aeronautical chart. And the beauty about this, is, Your Honor, is it gets worse. They then use this map after I put the Wolf Kill location on it.
Mr. Hague, the recording, when was that made?
I'd have to look, but it would be
made
in
at the time
June of 2004. So
I'm not worried about dates. I'm worried about this recording is of you putting the Wolf Kill indications on the map?
Yes. Yep. Okay. In ink. Right. And that's recorded by the
and
state.
So you,
then,
just
like,
another question. You said that there's a recording of leaders and Gibbons?
Yes.
Gibbons confessing to falsification?
Yeah.
Where is
this
that?
This is very important.
I know. Where is it?
It is, I think my wife has a transcription.
Where did it, where's the tape?
It's still at home. I mean, I
where
can provide it.
Where did you get it?
Huh?
Where did you get it?
I got it from the state 9 years after we finally
part
get
the... Part of the Judge Bauman?
Yes.
Thing?
Yeah.
And... did you have that at the time of the appeal?
I'm not certain on that. I don't think so.
Well, you know when the Bauman hearing was. When was the Bauman hearing?
It was when you say appeal, the original appeal to the Court of Appeals or when I got into post-conviction relief. There's so many proceedings that I get confused.
Okay, let's cut it up. Did you have it at the time of the direct appeal, the first appeal?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Did you have it at the time of the appeal that got remanded that I'm dealing with?
Yes.
Did you present that information to the Court of Appeals?
Yes. And why I'm so freaked out here, and I'm just going to explain this.
I don't want
is they brought
about
in,
how you freaked out. I want to...
They brought...
Just listen to me, please. Take a deep breath. Take another one. Ready? Good. Good. Now... You think that there's this tape that you have, and you have a transcription of it, and you're claiming that the state trooper and the prosecutor are confessing to falsification of an exhibit on there?
Yes.
And you showed that to Mr. Robinson at some point?
Fairly recently. The transcription where Scott Leaders and Gibbons, and it's Tony Zellers, the state witness Zellers, it was during their interview.
Who transcribed this thing?
My wife transcribed it.
Okay. Did you play the tape, the recording itself, for Mr. Robinson?
No, I did not.
But you gave him the transcription that your wife generated?
Yes.
Okay. And so, Mr. Robinson, did you get a transcription of this tape that supposedly shows the state and the prosecutor and the trooper talking about falsification or something like that?
Prior to trial?
Ever.
I didn't get anything prior to trial. And most recently, probably within the last year or so, Mr. Hicks showed me a transcript of an interview that Trooper Gibbons and Scott Leaders.
And this is an interview of Leaders, Gibbons, and Zeller?
Right. But, I mean, by the time Mr. Heck showed that to me, I'd already retired. I retired in January 2011.
Maybe coming back. but you got it way back when, and this is nothing that you had seen prior to trial.
No.
Okay. Have you given me a copy of this transcription?
I don't.
Well, give it to me.
If
you don't have it now,
okay,
get it tonight.
We won't be able to, until we go home, you know, maybe a few days. I don't know. We brought a lot of stuff up here.
Yes, but it seems to me that if you've got a tape and a transcript of the state and the prosecutor confessing to changing exhibits, that would be something you would want me to look at.
Yes, it is.
So don't hide it. Hold back.
And I apologize.
I don't know why you would have left that critical piece of information at home.
I'm trying to do kind of the best I can. And we may, I'll talk with my wife. We may have it. We may have it. You're here, Your Honor. I don't know. But I'm just. I want
to. Mr. Hay, trying to help you here. Take a moment on a piece of paper or a notebook or something that you've got that you won't lose and say, get a copy of the recording of the Leader Gebbins Zeller interview and the transcript to the state and the judge.
I believe this argument was made to the Court of Appeals in the PCR appeal.
I don't know.
It was.
Yeah. And it was not remanded.
And right there, can we just talk about this for just a second, please?
No. You are going to get that thing for me. I'm going to make it part of this record. I don't know what its significance is. I don't know whether or not the recording or the transcript say what you claim they say. And if the Court of Appeals has already dealt with it, my hands are tied. If they haven't dealt with it, they will have that in front of them when you go back there, if you do. But you,
I'm just going to say something, please, and don't take it the wrong way. The
go ahead.
The Court of Appeals, they limited us to five issues, right? Your Honor, recognize that. To take away what happened with the map and the recording of Scott Leaders and Gibbons and Zellers talking about how the map had been falsified, they said I never briefed it well enough and never gave them any evidence of it. And there's a videotape of me at oral arguments to them with the state brought in the original map, and I said, here is the original map used against me at trial. Here's how the state falsified it. And there's a recording of them doing it. And there was transcriptions in the briefing to them. I don't know if I sent them the CD or not, but they then said, because Mr. Haig, you never brought up that the map was false and you never gave us any proof, and I'm here, I was showing them that you don't get to litigate this on remand. And I'm like, that's a lie. There's a videotape of me going in front of the Court of Appeals and giving them the stuff that I'm giving you.
Then let's focus on that.
I understand.
Stop arguing about the Court of Appeals screwed up. You're here now. This is your opportunity.
And I appreciate it.
All right. So I'm trying to help you here.
Okay.
Don't beat the dead horse.
Your Honor, I want to just break down and cry because...
Well, don't cry.
It's 15...
You keep telling me that. But now it's time for you to focus on this opportunity to tell me how you've been wronged and to show me evidence of that.
Okay.
Stop telling me the Court of Appeals is a bunch of horses' asses.
Well, I don't understand why they didn't...
I got that point.
Okay.
I got that. You don't like what they did. You think they screwed you. Okay?
Yep.
Crystal clear in my mind.
Okay.
Here's your chance.
Okay.
So don't blow it. All right? So stop freaking out about stuff that you've already told me and focus on what Mr. Robinson did or didn't do.
Okay.
Because they did tell you that you can deal with what you claim to be his ineffectiveness.
Okay.
So far you've told me one thing.
Yeah, I'll keep
that somehow he didn't recognize that the discovery violation occurred.
Okay.
Okay. You probably want to focus some more about what he did when he got the case and found out about what Brent Cole had done or not done, or what the deal was, or what you told him about what Brent Cole had done, or that's what you clearly can do. And now, if you keep telling me that the Court of Appeals is a bunch of jerks, you're wasting your time to focus on what they told you you could do here.
Okay. I appreciate
that.
Okay. The one more question I'd like to ask Mr. Robinson kind of on this issue is, was part of Leaders and Gibbons' case against me at trial that I was eliminating wolves in my guide area to improve my guide business?
Yeah.
So that was to the jury.
That was a theory that they...
That was to the jury. The jury heard that.
I know how the trial works.
And this... Okay.
But again, you
okay.
What you can clearly do is talk about what Mr. Robinson screwed up on, to be blunt. So the two areas that you talked about was mostly the change, the failure to enforce the plea agreement that you thought Cole had done for you. So So it would really help your case if you asked him questions about what he learned about Mr. Cole's negotiations.
Okay.
And why he did or did not pursue those. Okay? That's...
I'm getting there. It's just I wrote this up, and it's hard. I'm so stressed that I need to kind of follow my notes, or I won't be able to do this.
Well, has my suggestion...
Mr. Robinson...
You jump ahead to the part that's really important.
Okay. Well, let me just ask this one question here. Mr. Robinson, has prosecutor leaders committed other discovery violations?
Objection, relevance.
I assume you mean in this case.
In other cases.
That's irrelevant.
Even one that made the local newspaper?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Robinson, is it true that you did not recommend that I go to trial?
Repeat that, please.
Is it true that you did not recommend that I go to trial?
Let me see if I understand the question. Are you asking me whether I recommend that you do or do not go to trial?
Did you ever tell me...
Ask him a question that doesn't have all the negatives. And okay. The simple question is, did you advise me to go to trial?
Okay, did you advise me to go to trial?
After you decided you wanted to, yes.
So there would have never been any point where I said, should we try to make a new plea agreement? And you saying something like, we found this subject matter jurisdiction, and it's so strong that we should go to trial?
Well, if I understand your question is, did I advise you to take the plea deal or go to trial? Based on my memory, Mr. Haig, I asked you and told you, I said, we have two avenues that we could take here, Mr. Haig. We could try to enforce the plea agreement if we have sufficient evidence that there really was an agreement, or we can go to trial. We investigated by talking to Brent Cole as to whether or not there was in fact a plea agreement. He said that he and leaders really never came to any solid agreement. So when I told you that, I said, well, you know, Brent says that there wasn't a solid agreement. And I said, so the choice is yours, whether you want to prove there was an agreement or you want to go to trial. I did tell you that in my research, I thought I'd found some case law that says that in order for a court to have jurisdiction over your kind of case, it has to be based on some sworn testimony of a complaint or an information. It just can't be a bare allegation because the system requires these things to be made under oath. You decided to go to trial. So that's the strategy we took.
Did Mr. Is it Cole, true? Hang on. Does Mr. Cole, you spoke with Mr. Cole about the status of the plea negotiations.
Yes, I did.
And did Mr. Cole tell you that there, that in his opinion, there had been a deal struck?
Well, Mr. Cole said that he said that there wasn't, he kind of put it in the sense that they had discussed dealing, but they hadn't really come to some final firm agreement. I kind of questioned that a little bit because I knew, according to David, that there had been a time set up for him to go in and plead guilty to
something.
Right.
That would suggest that there was probably a deal or a partial deal if
right,
they were going
right.
to... They were willing to go in and change the plea.
Right. But
and it was Mr. Haig saying we had a deal?
Mr. Haig thought he had a deal
right.
at some point in time.
Right.
But
and Cole was didn't really back that up.
Right. At least to me, he did.
Right.
Now, I don't know what he told David or what he told others, but he didn't back up that there was, in fact, a plea agreement that we could enforce.
But you told Mr. Haig that there were two basic options. Correct. You know, we because Hague was saying there was a deal that the state reneged, and you were telling, okay, we can try and prove that there was a deal, right. And if we can prove it, we can try and get it enforced.
Correct.
And the other option is, you know, either don't do that, or if we fail at that effort, go to trial.
Well, I don't think it ever came up that I was going to try to renegotiate a plea deal at that particular time. So he decided to go to trial. Those were the options: try to enforce the agreement if there was one, or go to trial.
But he said, you're telling me that he opted not to try to enforce, but instead we're going to trial.
Correct.
I'm an innocent guy. Let's go for it.
Correct.
Is it true, in fact, that you told me that everything that happened with Mr. Cole was water under the bridge and we would have to start renegotiating with the state?
You didn't have a deal, so obviously you'd have to negotiate some
kind of deal. So when you say enforce the plea agreement, you mean some new plea agreement and not the one Mr. Cole had made for me?
No. Our discussions were about the alleged agreement that Mr. Leader, you, and Mr. Cole had agreed to, according to you, and that Leaders had changed his mind, according to you, and according to Mr. Cole. So Mr. Cole was basically telling me that because Mr. Leaders had not gone along with what the three of you had agreed to before, that you really didn't have an agreement because Mr. Leaders wanted to change his mind about the deal. That's the way I understood it, David.
Okay, well, and just so everybody knows, I have a list, and if I start jumping around, it'll get real confusing. And so I'm going to go down my list and not jump around. Is it true your defense for me at trial and on appeal was that there was a lack of subject matter jurisdiction because Leaders had not provided an affidavit for the charging information?
And a point on appeal was made actually at court. Before it got on appeal. And yes, I argued that the district court did not have subject matter jurisdiction over your case because they didn't have the proper document before it in order to obtain jurisdiction. In other words, my theory was that if there was a complaint for a misdemeanor, like there is for a felony, our laws require that these things be supported by oath and affidavit. The complaint was not.
Okay.
And therefore, I argued in front of District Court Judge Murphy that because it was not a sworn to complaint, the court didn't have jurisdiction because to invoke jurisdiction, you have to have proper documentation to do.
You made the argument, she rejected.
And she rejected.
Okay. Is it true you told me this defense was so strong that we should not put up any defense at trial?
No, because there were other cases that you were charged with besides the moose, if you recall.
Let me ask, your jurisdiction issue, did that
apply? Charges.
To all charges?
Well, the total complaint that was against him because it wasn't sworn to.
Okay. And then, but you thought you had other avenues to defend.
Well, and we did present other avenues to defend on the other charges that he had.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Hague.
Can you look at this? Okay, you just testified that you never told me that it was so strong that we should not put up any defense at trial. And I just want to admit a transcription of a meeting with Chuck Robinson 1506 where...
When was the meeting?
1506. I think it was in your office. It was me, Jackie, Greg Stombaugh, and you. And I'm just going to read it here.
What is it you're reading?
It is a transcription of a meeting with Mr. Robinson while he was my attorney. And
I asked, hang on.
Hang on.
Do I have him do it?
Just wait. Where did this thing come? Who made this recording? Who made the transcript?
I made the recording. Mr. Robinson was there when I had the tape recorders on the table. You remember me and Greg Stombaugh come in and Jackie. It was toward the end of your representation of me. And my wife made the transcription. And can I have him just read this?
Well, sure.
No, I'm going to object to that. If he wants to ask him questions about it, he can ask him questions about it. There are rules that govern how the evidence comes in. If he disagrees with what the witness testifies to, then he can try to refresh his recollection with it. But you can't just have him read a document that his wife created.
You can ask him questions about whether or not something was asked, something was said.
Okay. Is it true that on 1506, I stated to you, quote, you said the argument, and this is the subject matter jurisdiction, was so compelling you recommended I didn't even put on a defense. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Want me to tell you what I remember?
Yeah.
Okay. What I said to you, Mr. Hague, is what I would have said to any client in your position, is that in order to make the motion to dismiss your case for lack of jurisdiction, a couple of things had to happen. First of all, prejudice had to attach to the case. In other words, we come to court, everybody's there, court's in session, and then jeopardy attaches. For the purpose of the kind of motion that I intended to make was that you would lose that jeopardy attachment if you began to testify about the charges against you. In other words, it wasn't a question whether you did it or not. The question was whether the court had jurisdiction to hear the case or not. I'll explain that to you.
Okay. Is it true that your response was, that was a strategy, that was a strategy suggestion that we had? Yes.
I just told you it was a strategy suggestion. Yes.
Okay. And then is it true that I responded to you, I said, that you made to me, I didn't bring it up, you did.
Bring what up?
To not put up any defense at trial.
No, I never told you never to put up a defense. What I told you, Mr. Hague, was that in relationship to a motion to dismiss, that all we really needed to have was jeopardy to attach. Didn't need testimony from anybody. Didn't make the argument that the court didn't have jurisdiction because it was proceeding on an unsworn to, without oath, complaint against you.
Okay. Is it possible me, as an ignorant person, when you said don't put up any defense, I just thought that you were not going to do anything?
I don't know what you thought.
Okay.
I'm just telling you what I thought.
Okay. Is it true you told me this defense was so strong that we should, quote, unquote, stand mute at trial, unquote?
I just explained to you that, I just told you that for purposes of making a motion like that, all you really need is for jeopardy to attach. And jeopardy attaches when you come to court, judge bangs down the gavel and says, we're ready to proceed. All right, then jeopardy attaches in the criminal case. So I was explaining to you that if you're going to make a motion that asks the court to dismiss the charges based on the fact of lack of jurisdiction to hear the case, you don't need to put on a defense. Not that I was encouraging not to. I was just explaining to you the procedures involved with that kind of motion.
Well, let me see if let me make sure I understand. I think where you're going here is that you thought you had case law that said that this complaint had to be based on sworn testimony, sworn statement, and you thought that this complaint was not.
Correct.
And if you went to this judge in advance of trial and said this complaint doesn't have a sworn statement, judges say, hey, you're right, and would dismiss the case, and then the state would just turn around and get a complaint with sworn statement and start the process anew.
Correct.
So for this to be ultimately effective, you wanted to get the case to a point where if the case would, so pick a jury, jeopardy is attached for purposes of double jeopardy, right. So that if you then jumped up and said, hey, judge, you don't have jurisdiction, judge says, you're right, we don't have jurisdiction, then the state would try to fix this problem, but because you had passed the magic line of double jeopardy, they could not do that.
That's correct.
Right. So it was a timing issue and a, okay, that was, I mean, that was the context of your advice to him about, sure. about doing it in a way to make it effective rather than just simply ultimately to make it uncurable, whereas if you did it early on, it would be curable.
Correct.
Okay. Is it true you told me the U.S. Supreme Court cases Albright versus United States and Gersten versus Pugh supported your defense that the prosecutor not providing an affidavit to the charging information deprived the court of subject matter jurisdiction?
I used that case and I think a couple other cases to support my theory.
Okay, but the two main ones were Gersten, well, Albright versus U.S. and Gersten versus Pugh.
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, I've done so much legal research now in the past. It's very difficult now to say that in David Hecht's case, it was only these two cases that.
Okay.
Would it? Is it true that at your deposition, and I don't know exactly what it has there.
I'm not saying those cases had no impact on my theory. I'm just saying that I did tell you about those cases, yes.
Okay, so do you admit that those were cases that you relied upon?
They may not have been the only ones, but yes, they were involved.
Okay. Is it true you told me we shouldn't bring up any other defenses as this may waive or admit subject matter jurisdiction?
I just explained to you, and I think the judge just explained to you what the procedure is in court. For this type of motion, had I done it in advance of trial, and we hadn't even talked about testimony or what the defense is going to be, the judge could have granted motion, and then the state would have just been able to amend the complaint because there was no double jeopardy attached.
But that isn't my question.
But I'm explaining to you the answer to your question. What I explained to you is that if we allow the proceeding to start, including picking of the jury. Now, once that occurs, jeopardy attaches, double jeopardy attaches.
Okay.
So if we win the motion, then the state can't come back and say, oh, well, we just want to amend the complaint and charge.
I don't disagree that that's what you said. What I'm asking is, after jeopardy attached, and you made the motion after jeopardy attached that you told me we shouldn't bring up anything else, the false map or anything else.
Well, I didn't know.
Is that may waive, that may admit and waive to the court that they in fact had subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, first you assume it's something that I didn't even know there was a false map at the time we talked about strategy regarding the motion to dismiss, number one. Number two, I was just trying to explain to you that it's not an evidence. We don't need evidence if the court agrees that because this complaint was no, or information was not sworn to, there's no thing that the court can take jurisdiction over.
Again, I'm asking, is it true that you told me we shouldn't bring up any other defenses after you had raised, after jeopardy had attached? And you had filed the motion, isn't it true you told me we shouldn't bring up any other defenses because they may waive subject matter jurisdiction?
No, I didn't tell you not to bring up any defenses. What I'm saying is that there was no need to bring up defenses at the time we're making this motion because jeopardy had attached.
Is it true that you told me if we did bring that up, it may sabotage your...
Prior to...
No, after jeopardy attaches.
No.
Jeopardy comes in, jeopardy attaches, you file a motion that subject matter jurisdiction wasn't had, and you know, so we're in jeopardy. You file the motion, and then you tell me, hey, Dave, and we shouldn't bring up any other defenses because this may jeopardize admit or waive the subject matter jurisdiction?
I don't. No, I didn't tell you that way. And maybe you interpreted that way, but I didn't tell you that way. I didn't tell you that you didn't need to bring up any defenses. What I said was that we don't need to bring up any evidence at this point because jeopardy is attached, and if the judge agrees with us, your case is over, period. And the state can't come back and amend the complaint.
Okay, but...
And then after she ruled, I didn't tell you not to bring up a defense. We went ahead with your defense.
Okay, so after she ruled, you did not tell me that, hey, if we bring up other defenses, this may waive or admit subject matter jurisdiction.
No, I didn't tell you that way, David. No.
Okay.
I did and tell so you that we could waive defenses if we prematurely asked the court to dismiss the case for lack of jurisdiction.
And so is it true during my trial and then later on appeal that the subject matter jurisdiction defect, because of the prosecutor not swearing to the charging information, that defect or that defense was valid through trial and on appeal?
The question on appeal would be, did the court err by not granting your motion to dismiss? That would have been the issue on appeal, which I raised on appeal for you.
Okay. And so basically we went through trial and into appeal with you continuing to rely on the subject matter jurisdiction.
Along with other points on appeal, yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Is it in fact true that you knew before trial and appeal that leaders had cured the subject matter jurisdiction defect?
No. You hadn't cured it because the complaint that you were going to court on wasn't sworn to.
I'd like to point out that in Robinson's deposition, on page 10, he admits he knew that Scott Leaders had cured the subject matter jurisdiction before trial.
I don't think that I got anything that showed that your complaint was sworn to, which was, in my opinion, the only way it could be corrected.
I'm sorry, what are you trying to show him?
Just hang on here.
All right.
Okay, I'd like to have Mr. Robinson read into the record, like halfway down page 10 and the beginning of page 11 in his deposition.
This is the Robinson's deposition.
Robinson's deposition of
page 10.
Page 10 and 11, and it's a September 9th, 2011 deposition. So I'd like you to read this here, and the state's questioning Mr. Robinson, and he's answering. So from about here down to here, top of the next page.
Mr. Robinson, would you give me the, he's pointing to somewhere, give me a line number, page 10, line what?
This is page 10. He's showing me line 17.
And then through to page 11, like line 3 or so.
Okay, I'm reading it. Okay, I read it. What's the
and
question?
Can you read it into the record, please?
Yeah, badly. And did you raise that issue in a motion prior to trial? Yes, I did. And how did the court rule on that motion? Denied the motion. And you, no answer, and allowed Mr. Leaders to amend the information. So prior to actually completing trial, the information was amended? Yes.
Curing this defect.
Well, that was after we made the motion,
and,
David.
And Robinson answers yes.
Yeah, but that was after it was, listen, I do have a memory about that proceeding.
My point is, during trial and even after trial, he was telling me this was valid, when now he's testified he knew before trial it was no good.
No, I didn't
say. So he's sending me to trial on something that's no good. He's sending me to appeal on something that's no good. And, you know,
I'm sorry, Your Honor, 15 years down the road, and I wanted to have a beautiful life with my wife and kids. We built an awesome guiding business.
Jackson,
the state of Alaska came in and asked me to kill wolves for them and gave me a permit and told me where to kill them, and I've lost everything because not only did they lie about things.
Please stop.
Okay.
This is not helpful.
I'm sorry.
I would just like
to help you.
Would you look at this, please, right here and now?
Page 10.
Line 11 through
line
page 17. 11, line 3.
No, line 17 on page 10 through lines 2, 1 and 2 on page 11.
And I want it on the record that Scott Leaders amended the information long before trial, curing the defect.
No, whatever he did.
Yes, he did.
Whatever he did is already on record.
I don't recall him doing it until the judge allowed him to do it at trial.
Both of you. Mr. Hay, go back to your table. Oh. Ask your next question. I've read it.
Is it true during your deposition? Is it true you testified during your deposition that my only defense at trial and on appeal was the lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
No, I did not, because you were charged with other things as well. What I told you, and I will tell you, hold it. What I told you, David. What I told you, David, was yes. If we win this motion, all the charges are gone because the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction. Yes.
Do you want to show him something that you think contradicts that answer?
Yeah, if I could. Can I?
Certainly.
Page 135, line 4 through 16. And I guess, can you read that? And I guess have Your Honor read it also after he's done.
What's the page again, Mr.
135.
4 through 16.
Correct.
And what's your question?
Is it true that you told me to rely on the subject matter jurisdiction and gosh, I'd have to go look at my question. Do you remember what I asked?
I think you are accusing him of telling you that
the subject matter jurisdiction defense was so powerful, you should do nothing whatsoever.
Okay.
Else. Is that what you're accusing him of doing?
Yes. And I wanted him to read whatever 4 through 16, and if he read it out loud, that might help.
He denies that.
Okay.
So do you have something in this deposition
yes.
that contradicts
and
that?
And can I read it right now, or just can you read it?
I'll read it.
I'd like it read into the
record. I will read it into the record.
Okay.
Okay, 135, starting at line 4. Question. I'm just wanting, sometimes it's hard to get this stuff by asking a question. So you, is it true that you told me you recommended going to trial and not putting on evidence? So hang on here a second. So, Mr. Hague, you're the questioner here in this deposition. So this question is by Mr. Hague. Okay, I'm just wanting, sometimes it's hard to get this stuff by asking a question. So you, is it true that you told me that you recommended going to trial and not putting on evidence? Answer. After you decided that we were going to go to trial and not pursue the plea agreement enforcement, then I said, you know, there's no need putting on evidence, and what we needed to do was to establish his defect. Question. Okay, in other words, you thought we should just rely totally on a defect and not actually try to win the case on the merits. Answer, correct.
Yeah, and so what I want established, and sorry that I'm talking now, is that he told me that this defect was so great, we shouldn't even put up any other defense.
Did you put on a defense?
Yes, because I demanded it.
Okay.
But what I'm getting at is all the stuff that should have helped me, like them using my statement against me,
go on.
The map being falsified, none of that came up. It was all a song and dance. It was all a sham. And my attorneys were in on it.
They were in on it?
Yes.
Who were they in on it with?
The state of Alaska.
Why do you think that?
Because when you look at the totality of all the evidence that was falsified, all the evidence that's destroyed, and my attorney that I paid, I think, about $50,000 to admitting he's using a defense for me at trial and on appeal that he's now admitted he knew at the time was no good?
I never admitted that.
I think that that's wrong.
Your next question? You have a list?
I was going to ask, this might not be allowed. Mr. Robinson, how can you testify that my only defense at trial and on appeal was the lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and also to testify that you knew prior to trial this was not a defense?
First of all, it isn't true that I knew prior to trial it wasn't a defense.
You admitted that
no, I
Scott
didn't.
Leaders cured the defect.
After the motion was denied. And that was after we'd gone to court.
You admitted that the defect was cured.
After the judge denied it, which sort of proves my point.
Ask the next question.
Okay. Is this perjury by inconsistent statements?
Is what perjury?
You testifying that this is my only defense at trial, and then also testifying during the same deposition that you knew it had been cured before trial.
First of all, I didn't testify in my deposition that I knew it was cured before trial. I said the motion was denied and the judge amended the complaint or the information at the time. So
and Scott Leader, and the state asked you, did Scott Leaders amend the complaint and cure this defect? And you said yes.
The judge allowed the state to amend the complaint after she denied the motion to dismiss.
But still, you admitted that the defect was cured.
Mr. Hague. You're kind of wasting your time. You've
okay.
made your point. So
okay.
unless you want this all just to...
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't want you to be sorry. I want to make sure that you get an opportunity to tell me what you think is important. And sometimes you get a little over-focused on details.
Okay.
So I want you to move on to another important argument.
And so I should move on from this subject matter jurisdiction thing, in your opinion?
Yeah. As far as I can tell, he filed the motion, it got denied, and it was appealed, right?
He filed a motion, it was denied, the prosecutor swore to the information, and he admitted that cured the defect.
All of this is part of the existing record.
Okay.
So the purpose of this hearing is to give you a chance to put on stuff that's not part of the existing record.
Okay.
So you shouldn't focus on redoing what's already in the existing record.
Well, so, and I agree, Your Honor. The problem is the courts above and below you haven't looked at this stuff, and that's why I'm so...
I can't solve that problem for you.
Okay. Well, I believe a grand jury will at some point. I believe a grand jury of the citizens of this state will eventually have judges and prosecutors and troopers and defense attorneys come in and say, how is this going on in our courtrooms right under our noses? But that's, I'll go to the next question. Is it true that you saw...
You're using up your time.
Okay. Is it true that you saw Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons during my trial?
I heard that. I didn't see it.
Would you have ever stated this?
I don't remember if I did or not. Did I saw them together in the car?
Is it true that you saw Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons during my trial?
I heard that.
You would have never said it.
I said I heard that,
You would have never said that you seen, personally seen...
I don't
know
what I would have never said. I just said I heard that. Now, if you can show me where I said I saw that, then...
When did you hear that she was riding with the trooper? I mean, was that during trial that you heard her, or was it months later? Or?
It was... long ago. It's kind of hard to say when exactly it occurred, but I heard
it. Let me ask you this. What was the allegation that Murphy was riding with the trooper, was that raised during trial?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
But you certainly never saw it, and you're not sure when you heard these allegations.
Right. All right. I mean, I know I heard the allegations.
No, I understand
that.
But you're not sure when you heard them.
Okay. Can I admit a phone conversation between Chuck Robinson and David Haig made on 2/4/11? And can I hand this to him and have him read it?
If it's a prior inconsistent statement to what he just said, sure.
Yeah.
And I guess have him read it, and then if you'll be kind enough to read it into the record.
I'll check for that procedure.
What's the objection?
That the judge doesn't get to just read documents that the petitioner hands him into the record. That's not
how would you prefer that he do it?
He can ask questions of the witness, and if they're inconsistent, then he can impeach him with that, but he has to state what it is and where it came from, and I'm guessing this is another transcript that he created.
Okay.
So I want that as part of the record.
Now it is.
Well, I don't know if that's true yet. He'll have to state that.
What is this thing?
It is a recording of a tape-recorded conversation
with
Mr. Robinson.
Mm-hmm. What I said was, and you brought up this other woman from the other department who was investigating some judicial complaint.
I'm sorry,
complaint.
I can't
hear. What? Right. This was in regard to a call he called me about, wanted to know whether Marla Greinstein had ever contacted me about Judge Murphy. And what I said was, okay, let's get it from the beginning so we have full context.
Okay. Here.
Wait, hold on. Do you remember saying whatever was written on that paper?
No.
Okay, where did that paper come from?
Don't know yet.
He can't just read something that the defendant hands
he
him as though there is
anything
a word.
Anything he wants to refresh recollection.
Sure, and then ask him another question based upon it, but he can't just
read.
But
we're not there yet, so your objection's denied.
So now I've read it.
Do you agree that that's a true and accurate...
No, I don't know how accurate this is because I didn't do the transcript, not even know it was being recorded, but at the time. But so I can't vouch for the accuracy of this document because I don't know anything about its background.
Well, does it equate to what you remember?
I remember you calling me. I was in Washington, D.C. at the time. My mother had just passed away. And I remember you calling me.
So what's your question? My question is this an accurate representation of a conversation?
No.
Okay.
So, whether it's accurate or not, ask him the basic question about what it is.
Okay. Is it true that you seen Trooper Gibbons and Judge Murphy running around in the trooper car.
My best recollection is that I heard it. And if you read that statement very closely, if I said I saw it, I also said I could be wrong. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. Okay, can you, how do I go about this? It also says, I said, do you remember it happening during my trial? And Mr. Robinson replies, I saw it. And I said, and or sentencing. And Robinson said, I saw it during the trial, I believe. And he does say, I could be wrong.
Objection.
You know, all these days.
That's not
kind
a question. That
together.
Should all be stricken.
Anyway, I don't know what to do. Your Honor, I don't know what to do with this stuff.
You think he's got a prior inconsistent statement, okay?
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. And there is a recording of this that we could provide.
Is it true the reason you didn't protest Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons was that you didn't think it was your job to protest Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons?
That's not true.
Next question. He said it's not true.
Okay. I'd like to admit some notes that I took with Mr. Robinson during a 1/14/18 meeting. Page 51 of 1/14/18 meeting. And so what refutes that is page 51 of 1/14/18 meeting and notes of 1/9/18 meeting.
These are notes you made?
Yes.
No, you can't do that.
Huh?
You can't do that.
I gave him a copy of the notes that I made at the time. When we had, Mr. Robinson, did we have a meeting on January 14 of 2018 and a meeting on January 9th of 2018? And I believe both of them, Dave Brummel, a friend of mine, Dave Brummel, was with, so it would have been me and Dave Brummel.
I recall meeting with you a couple times in January 2018. One was that a coffee and waffle restaurant in Soldotna. And the other one was at my house.
Yeah. And can I approach and show you notes and see if you recognize them? And I believe I...
You can.
And did I give you a copy of notes I made during those meetings?
You may have. I don't have any of those notes, but you may have.
Okay, can I approach and show you these notes and see?
Show him something and ask him if it refreshes his recollection.
Okay.
If he says yes, then you ask him the question.
Okay.
Not what the notes say, not the contents of the notes, but the what's the question you're trying to ask him?
I'm trying to refute that
What's the question that you're trying to originally ask him?
I originally asked, is it true that he didn't think it was his job to protest Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons?
And he said that's not true.
Okay. I have a note here that I made while he was sitting there watching me do it, and I gave him copies of the notes. Does that refresh your memory?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't refresh my memory that I ever told you that it wasn't my job to do one thing or the other. I don't understand how that's written in there. I don't know. I'm just saying I can't.
It doesn't refresh his recollection, so move on
okay.
to the question.
And I think I have a recording that refutes this that he made, but I'm a little...
How much longer do you think you have with Mr. Robinson?
Probably a while. I don't know. Maybe an hour.
because we're done at 1:30 for today.
Okay.
So my.
Well, I'll try. I'll just keep. I'll try to go as fast as I can here.
Hang on. So it is likely that you won't be done by 1:30. So you want Mr. Robinson to be here tomorrow morning.
Correct.
Okay. What's your schedule tomorrow morning?
I had planned to be at home tomorrow morning, but if Mr. Hegg wants me to testify tomorrow, then I would request that he pay for my expenses of staying overnight, including a room.
You going to do that, Mr. Hegg?
What was that?
Because this is taking so long, he will have to spend the night, and he's suggesting that since you subpoenaed him, you should pay him.
I have no problem with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Does he want the money now or later?
Guys, work out where he's going to stay, and you pay for his room, and
okay.
Then it'll be tomorrow morning. But okay. You can keep going. We're going to stop at 1:30. If you're not done, you'll
pick up where we left off.
We'll be here at 8:30 tomorrow. We'll keep going. Then the state's going to have an opportunity to cross-examine. And then, besides Mr. Robinson, just so that I can get a sense, you said Mr. Zeller will be testifying.
Yep. And I actually had some others. I wanted my wife, Tom Stepnoski, Drew Hildebrand, and Dale DeLifka.
Okay. So I don't know what any of those people are going to say. You do.
I know, and this is going longer than I thought.
So I'll hurry along. Just Mr. Hague, wait, somebody trying to help. It is possible you're not going to be able to get all those witnesses on tomorrow. So my advice to you is you decide who are the most important ones. Right?
Okay.
And then you have those individuals be here at 9 o'clock, so that they're here to start. If you don't have time for all of them, don't start with your least important witnesses.
Well, I would have started with Mr. Robinson, but he wasn't here, and Cole was one of the kind of more not necessary. So anyway, I'm just saying that tripped me up.
My point simply is, I want you to identify your most important witnesses and put them next after Mr. Robinson, so you.
I understand.
You got that?
I do understand.
Good.
Loud and clear. I also want it on the record that I wanted 2 weeks for this evidentiary hearing, and I got 10 hours.
Now you're burning up your clock.
Okay.
Burn on.
I have another recording that I'd like to show Mr. Robbins, see if it refreshes his memory about.
Huh? You may do that.
Okay.
And you ask him the simple question. Does this refresh your recollection?
This is a.
Don't talk about it. Show it to him.
Can you read from there to there? Let's see if that refreshes your recollection.
What's the question you want to ask him that you're concerned with? I don't want you to talk about what is in that. What's the question?
Whether it's true he, in fact, stated that it was not his job to protest Judge Murphy running around with Trooper Gillis during my trial.
Important?
Because the Court of Appeals remanded it, and they said not only do I have to prove that they ran around together during my trial, I also have to prove that Mr. Robinson was told about it, and Mr. Robinson didn't have a valid reason for not protesting. And I think him telling me that it's not his job to protest, well, if it's not his job to protest, Your Honor, whose job is it when I paid him $50,000?
Let me help you out here.
Okay.
The first part, there's three parts to this. A, she drove around with the trooper. Okay, you got to prove that. Secondly, that somebody told Robinson at the time that Murphy's driving around with the trooper, or that he saw it, okay?
And I brought in evidence that says that he saw it during trial.
Okay, all right. So what's your question?
The question is it true, did this refresh your memory, that you didn't believe that it was your job to protest Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons?
Okay. I'm not sure that this addresses that issue, David.
So the answer would be no.
Okay. Well, and I don't know, you want to look at this or not?
Is it true you thought Judge Murphy was a law enforcement type judge and not the independent judiciary type I was supposed to have?
I don't know what you mean by supposed to have. I've held several opinions about judges in my 38 years of practicing law.
Okay, what's your opinion of Judge Murphy?
At the time that she had your trial?
Yeah.
I had the opinion that Judge Murphy was a judge that could be prone to agreeing more with prosecutors than defendants' lawyers.
Okay. And so, is it true that you thought Judge Murphy was a law enforcement type judge and not the independent judiciary type I was supposed to have?
I thought that Judge Murphy, like other judges in our system, may have shown more inclination to side with law enforcement than with criminal defense.
Okay, I'm just going to, just to make it a little clearer, I'd like to show him his deposition, and I'd like you to write this down, Your Honor. Deposition, page 204. Line number 14 through 17. And can I?
Page again?
It's that one.
204.
204, 14 through 17.
Okay.
And I guess, can Your Honor read this into the record, please?
What's the question?
What's the question?
The question is it true that Judge Murphy was a law enforcement type judge and not the independent judiciary type you're supposed to have?
And the answer
was?
And his, Pat, Mr. Robinson's answer under oath was, that was my opinion of her.
Okay.
It was thinking at the time, but no, it's that. Mr. Hague, a correction on the deposition. Didn't it say that was my thinking at the time, or that was my opinion at the time?
At the time of the deposition.
It doesn't say, it says that was my opinion of her, period.
Oh, okay.
And then I said, so it's likely you said that, and you answered, it's likely, period.
Your next question?
Is it true that Judge Murphy made conflicting decisions at the request of the state to take away the defense that my wolf control permit would have given me?
I'm not sure I quite understand that question, David. Could you make it a little more?
Is it true that you filed a motion that I could not be charged as a guide, I could only be charged under the wolf control program?
Correct.
And she, the state said, this is a factual question that has to go to the jury, and she's not going to rule on it. It's going to go to the jury. And then a week later, the state files a protection order saying, because this is now a, and to get the judge to testify that way, they said, the state said, judge, you can't rule on this. You can't rule on this. It's a factual issue. It has to go to the jury. A week later,
this
the state
is, this
changes
is all
it.
Part of the record, right?
Yeah. But I'm just, I want it in here because the public doesn't know the record, and this case is going to be decided with...
The clock is running, Mr.
Okay, I understand. But anyway, a week later, the state filed a protection order saying that, or asking for a protection order that said, because this is a legal issue, we want a protection order ordering them not to bring up that he should have been charged under the Wolf Control Program and not as a guide. Do you remember Judge Murphy making those two conflicting decisions?
I remember making a point in your case that you had a license or permission to allow you to trap, not hunt, and that you should have been charged with a trapping violation in violation of your permit. The judge didn't allow that.
The state did argue
that it was a factual question, so the jury should determine that. Then the state said, no, it's a legal issue, and they should determine. But anyway.
And then she granted that. So what I'm saying is, how can she rule that it's both a legal issue and a factual issue to side against me both times?
You asking me or are you asking the judge?
Anybody. Oh, the public.
David, I don't know. I brought it up on appeal. That's all I know.
I'm just going to read out of your deposition and tell me if this is true.
Mr. Haig, is this something that you think is important to the ruling I'm going to make or the Court of Appeals, or is this something you want to tell your supporters?
Because it shows that Judge Murphy was biased against me.
Yes, but all of this is already in the record, so you're wasting your time here.
Okay. Well, I'll move on here.
Okay. Focus on things that aren't in the record that you're using this hearing to develop.
Is it true that the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct investigator Marla Greenstein never contacted you during the investigation of Judge Murphy riding around with Trooper Gibbons during my trial?
I can say that I was never contacted by her.
Okay, so, and I guess I'm not allowed to testify now, but there's a certified document. Have you seen a certified document from Marla Greenstein stating that, in fact, she had contacted you?
I can't remember whether it was at my house or at the
It was at your where you broke your hip and you're in the recovery room at the hospital.
Oh, right. You did see me at the hospital. I remember that now. I didn't remember that before, but I remember you.
And I was there with Senator Machiki.
But I remember you showed me some stuff at the hospital or at the house or at the coffee shop. I'm not sure now which one it was, but that apparently somebody said they had contacted me about that issue.
So, I mean, the bottom line is that Marla never contacted you regarding the Murphy trooper allegation. Okay.
And then she wrote a certified. And is it true that when you seen that certified document, you agreed that that was proof of perjury by Marla Greenstein?
Well, I didn't agree that it was any proof of perjury, but that's what you were claiming. I'm just saying that she didn't contact me.
So you would have never agreed that that was perjury in a certified document?
I don't make a perjury decision. Now, whether or not she made a false statement or a true or not true statement, that's another question.
But in fact, her statement that she'd contacted you was not true.
Never contact.
Okay. And sorry that I'm so disorganized here.
Sorry, can I just try?
I don't know what you're doing, but I'm...
Okay. Does this recollect your... Can you read this and tell me if this is a true...
What is it, then?
It is a certified response... by Marla Greenstein to the Alaska Bar Association. And in it, she says, in Mr. Haig's matter, I interviewed Mr. Haig's attorney, Arthur Robinson. Is that a true statement, Mr. Robinson?
I was never interviewed by her.
So this document made under certified as true is false, the document, correct?
It says this letter constitutes a true and correct statement of the facts to my best knowledge and belief. That to say it was signed under perjury, but
okay. But where she says this, and I'd like to admit this into evidence.
You've made the point that Mr. Robinson has testified that she never spoke with him.
Well, I want you to please look at this so that you know what can I admit this into evidence?
Sure.
And I'd like to just state this as
for what purpose? I'll object because it's irrelevant. So what's the purpose of this?
This is a proof that there was a cover-up by the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct that my judge was chauffeured by the main witness against me during my trial, and I, as an American citizen, has a constitutional right to an unbiased judge. And not only was my judge running around full-time with the main witness against me...
Mr. Haig, let me help you out here.
The only person that investigates judges in this state falsified an official investigation, and not only did she do that, when I filed a bar complaint, she then falsified a certified document to cover up her corrupt investigation. And I want it on the record.
It's irrelevant, and it shouldn't be admitted.
It's admitted. It proves there was a cover-up.
Mr. Haig, I'm admitting it.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Do you have any witness that says he or she saw Judge Murphy in the trooper car?
Yes, whole slew of them.
Okay.
All over.
All right. See,
Mr. Robinson,
Haig,
is it
Mr. Haig, let me help you here. If you have witnesses who saw Judge Murphy in the trooper car, that's important information.
That's all on the record. There's affidavits. Like you said, it's all on the record. There are affidavit after affidavit after affidavit saying we personally witnessed Judge Murphy riding around.
Just
Tony Zellers, Tom Stepnoski, Drew Hildebrand, Wendell Jones, who's now dead, a former trooper.
Mr. Haig, rather than spend time convincing me that Greenstein made some sort of false allegation, it would be more helpful to your case if you put the witnesses on who saw Judge Murphy driving around with the trooper.
Okay.
That's the important part. Not that the Judicial Conduct Commission is a fraudulent entity, not that Marla is a lying person.
But you see,
what's
Your
important
Honor,
for your case in this hearing is for you to prove that, in fact, Judge Murphy drove around with the trooper. So if you have witnesses of that, those are more important witnesses.
What I believe is more important for the citizens of this state to know that the only investigator of judges for the past 30 years, and that's investigator of you and every other judge in this state, is falsifying investigations to cover up for corrupt judges.
Mr. Haig, I think that's an important point for you to make.
Okay. You think I made it well enough?
Yes, but you're wasting your time.
Okay.
You can make that allegation outside of the public. You can do it all you want. I encourage you to do that. But what you're wasting your time on is the proof you need to prove, which is, in fact, that Murphy actually drove with the troopers. So if you have witnesses who saw that,
well,
you should bring them in. Because if you get to 1:30 tomorrow and you say, geez, Judge, I don't have time to put my witnesses on who saw Judge Murphy, I'm going to say, then why were you talking about Marla so damn much?
Okay. All those witnesses have already sworn out affidavits, and they're in the court record.
You do what you think is best.
Okay. Is it true, Mr. Robinson, that in Alaska there is, quote, a, quote, good boy network, unquote, of prosecutors, cops, judges, and magistrates who protect their own?
And that's probably true throughout the whole country.
Okay, so you agree that it's true here in this state also?
Well, I'm of the opinion, and I'm not the only one, that there are certain cliques that exist in all professions, all industries, and that the legal profession is probably not exempt from it.
Okay. Is it true the reason you could not pursue the plea agreement Brent Cole made was because you were not part of that deal?
No, that's not the reason.
I have a recording, a transcription of a recording refuting that, and I'd like to admit it, have Mr. Robinson look at it.
Well, you could ask him if it refreshes his recollection and ask him that question.
Okay.
But you can't just put the conversation in without laying a foundation and having somebody testify about who participated in the conversation.
This is a transcription of a recording made with Chuck Robinson on January 5th of 2006.
Let's see if this refreshes your recollection, the highlighted part.
And the question is what?
I forget.
Not
Is it true he didn't enforce? Is it true he told me he could not enforce the plea agreement Brent Cole had made because he was not part of that deal?
When was this made?
January, it's right at the bottom, January 5th of 2006.
And where was it made?
In your office.
And well, I'm not sure I understand why what your question is. This doesn't seem to go to your question.
My question was, is it true that you couldn't enforce the plea agreement I made with Brent Cole because you were not part of that deal?
Sort of taken out of context, Mr. Hague, if you look over to there, right there.
Okay. Anyway, so you're...
No, anyway.
Okay, so what's your answer?
Well, see, I can't answer that question the way you asked it because it's not in the context of what's in the document.
Is it true that... I stated, remind me again why we didn't pursue the deal Brent Cole had because I've been thinking about that and thinking about that and thinking about that. And is it true? You responded, you're asking me why you, meaning me, didn't pursue that deal.
No. Meaning you.
Yeah.
That's me.
Okay. Oh. And then I say, you say, you're asking me why you didn't pursue that deal. I say why we, me and you, didn't pursue the deal Brent Cole had, and then you jump in, we, and I say, you and I, why didn't you and I, and you said, quote, I wasn't part of that deal, unquote.
Yeah, but then you got it.
Okay, read it.
Well, I'm you not think sure it? The court wanted me to read it, but...
Okay.
Should I read it?
I don't know what you're getting at.
What I'm getting at is Mr. Robinson, when I asked
him... Ask him a simple question. Why didn't you enforce the Cole deal?
Yeah, why didn't you enforce the Cole deal?
I think I already answered that. I gave you an option. You chose to go to trial. Number two, it wasn't really clear from speaking to Brent Cole that there was a deal.
Isn't
and
it
I
true?
Mentioned that in here, too.
Isn't it true, though, at the time you said you couldn't enforce it because you were not part of that deal?
No. The question is, why didn't you enforce it?
With I'm not
Cole.
An attorney. And I tried to enforce it with Cole. I think that's abundantly
okay, well,
clear.
But my point was...
You want that, or...
Well, my point... No, I like to answer the question. My point to you at the time, Mr. Hague, was that the deal that you were talking about was something that you and Brent Cole were trying to put together, not me, you, and anybody else.
Okay.
All right?
So it's true that you couldn't enforce any deal that me, Brent Cole, and Scott Leaders put together?
That's asked and answered several times.
Okay. Well,
and wait a minute.
Can I?
But I don't want you to go away without reading this part.
Can you read it?
Yeah. What I told you was it was fuzzy as to whether or not Scott Leaders had agreed to the deal that you and Brent tried to give to him. Based on what Brent said and what Scott said, so both you were the one in the deal with Brent, not me.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. We've had a deal, and when we came to you, you said no matter what kind, how enforceable the deal was, you couldn't do it because you weren't part of the deal.
No, that's not how that is, Mr. Hague.
Move on to another topic.
Is it true you told me that everything I did with Cole was, quote, water under the bridge, unquote?
With regard to what, Mr. Hague?
Statements, plea deal, everything. Not doing anything. Basically selling me out to the state.
Who sold you out to the state?
Brett Cole.
I never told you
and Brent Mr. Cole Robinson. Oh. And Mr. Osterman.
I never told you that Brent Cole sold you out to the state in order to build the bridge. If that's what you're trying to
do. Okay, so you would have never said that everything with Brent Cole was, quote, water under the bridge, unquote.
When you decided to go to trial, it didn't matter to me that you and Brent had some disagreement about a fee deal that Mr. Leaders was not going to agree to. I put it to you. Do you want to try to make it a fee agreement?
Okay.
Or you want to go to trial, you decide to go to trial.
Is it true you have stated that you assumed I was relying on something when I gave up a whole year's income and gave Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons a five-hour interview?
I'm not following that question, Mr. Hayes.
Is it true that you assumed that I was relying on something to quit guiding for a year and to give the government a statement?
I'm not sure what you were assuming, but you said that you
had... No, is it true that you assumed I was relying on something?
Well, I assume you were relying on some kind of discussions or talks, but I never saw anything in writing that said you'd done anything.
I know, but didn't we tell you that Brent Cole never put anything in writing?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that you're asking me
something
that I can't really verify one way or the other.
Is it true an attorney lying directly to his client may not be ineffective assistance of counsel?
Lying about what? That this guy is...
And my next saying was, would you have ever said this while you and I were discussing whether Brent Cole lied to me about my agreement?
Repeat the question once again, Mr. Hayes.
Is it true... I'm going to combine these two questions. Is it true that Brent Cole lying to me about my plea agreement was not ineffective assistance of counsel?
I don't remember telling you anything like that. But okay.
Well, I have a transcription that proves that, I guess. Is it true that I told you that Cole said he could not do anything that would, quote, piss Leaders off, unquote, because he had to be able to make deals with Leaders in the future?
Well, it's true you told me that, but I don't know whether that in fact...
That happened. Okay, I see. No. Is it true that you never thought of an ineffective assistance of counsel claim against Brent Cole?
I didn't have, in my opinion, enough evidence at the time that we decided to go to trial to sue Brent Cole for ineffective assistance of counsel when both Scott Leaders and he was standing with no deal.
Okay. Is it true that when I asked you if you could file an ineffective assistance of counsel claim against Cole, you responded, I never paid you for an ineffective assistance claim against Brent Cole?
Well, that's true. You didn't hire me for an ineffective assistance claim against Brent Cole. You hired me to defend you in a criminal case.
Is it true you can claim ineffective assistance of counsel on appeal?
You can always claim on appeal anything you want to claim on appeal.
Okay, so you could have actually brought up ineffective assistance of counsel when you filed my appellate points.
Well, now the question is whether or not there was reasonable basis for doing so, and I didn't think there was a reasonable basis because there was no agreement between Scott and Leaders and between Scott Leaders and Brent Cole that there was ever an agreement, David.
Okay. Is it true that your private investigator, Joe Malatesta, did not find that there was an enforceable plea agreement?
I, in addition to Mr. Malatesta, investigated your claim about this agreement. Mr. Malatesta also spoke to Mr. Cole, and from my understanding of his report to me, Mr. Cole again reiterated that Scott Leaders changed his mind, there wasn't a deal.
So you would have never had anything from Mr. Malatesta leading you to believe that you should try to enforce the plea agreement?
Remember having anything.
I'd like to admit a
a copy of private investigator Joseph Malatesta giving Mr. Robinson a written note that says, "Don't forget to remember to motion on the DA backing out of the original offer."
Well, backing out means there wasn't a deal, apparently. I don't understand your point.
I don't know.
Mr. Hagg, let me make the suggestion. You seem to be a little disorganized right now, probably because it's been a long day and you're tired. Would this be a good time to stop, or we'll start up again tomorrow at 8:30?
I'd like to get in as much as I can. I found it right here.
All right.
And so.
I'm going to object to yours.
I don't know what this is, so I.
Oh, I thought that was the letter from his private investigator that he was just.
It is. It's a note from his private investigator to Mr. Robinson, dated January 25th, 2005. And I'd like you to read the, I think, couple pages in. There's a highlighted.
This section. Is a letter to whom?
To Mr. Robinson, from Mr. Robinson's work private product. Investigator.
It's work product from Mr. Malatesta to me.
Okay.
Well, it's fairly long, David. I'm,
yeah.
You know.
Well, can you look at...
Well, I can say that this appears to be a
can
work
you go to
product...
the last page, please? Not, and that's the billing statement, the very last page. The last page is the right there. Can you read that into the record?
No, not yet.
Okay.
No. You can ask him if that refreshes his
Okay, does that refresh your mind?
Well, I've read it, yeah.
Okay.
I got to read it to determine whether it refreshes my memory, right? Okay, what's your question?
Question was, did you ever, anyway, you had said that you had your investigator investigate and he didn't find anything showing there was a plea agreement. And I asked, would there have ever been anything from your investigator? I said, so you would have never received anything from your investigator indicating that he thought there was a plea agreement.
I didn't interpret it to mean that Mr. Malatesta had found, in fact, there was a plea agreement. What he says here is just don't forget to remember to motion on the DA backing out of the original offer. But then Brent Cole said there was no deal. So
okay,
where was that original offer go?
But a private investigator wrote you, your private investigator wrote you a note stating don't. And it says, note to attorney, don't forget to remember to motion on the DA backing out of the original offer. And I'd like to admit this as evidence, if I can.
I'll renew my objection.
No?
Well, actually, wait a minute. You want to put that in merely for the fact that the that the investigator
wrote him a note,
made some. Please remember this.
Yep.
Okay. What's your objection to that?
Well, I objected to hearsay, but I guess if it's not entered for the truth and
not
it's just being shown to show that he wrote the note, then I think it's irrelevant. So I'll object to relevance because he just said that he then followed up and
mark it. Hearsay objections overruled. I don't know whether it's relevant until I get the whole ball of wax.
Well, if there's something else in there other than that statement, then I need to look at it. There might be a lot of other things.
Want. All I'm admitting it for is a little part that he just talked about.
Okay.
The please remember regarding the to enforce the deal, that statement.
Is it true that it's common sense that if you make a deal that involves having your client give a statement that eventually is going to be used against him, you should get it in writing?
From whom?
Is it true that you...
Well, wait. Get it in writing from whom?
It's something that you said. I assumed what you meant is Brent Cole should have got something in writing from Scott Leaders, Trooper Gibbons, about what I might get for talking to them, what they could do with the statement, anything. And I think that's what you were talking about. Is I believe, and so the question again is it true that it's common sense that if Brent Cole made a deal that involved David Hegg giving a statement that is eventually going to be used against David Hegg, Brent Cole should have got it in writing?
There are certain things that should be in writing when deals are made, and there are other things that are not in writing that still become part of the deal when they go to court and memorialize it on the record.
Is that one of them? Your client going in and giving a statement, is that one of them that should be put in writing?
That the client's going to give a statement, or the writing itself, or the statement itself?
I don't know. It says that involves your client, giving your client a statement that eventually is going to be used against him. And so you were talking about the deal. You were saying that the deal, whatever was going to happen with me going in and talking to Trooper Gibbons and...
Let me help you out. If there was an agreement regarding Mr. Hay giving a statement, should it have been, with the prosecutor, should it have been put in writing?
Is that your question?
Yes.
I would want it to be in writing, simply so there wouldn't be any misunderstanding later what there was agreed to.
Yeah, especially maybe 15 years later?
No, I would have been more interested in what would have happened between the time the statement was made and when it was going to be used, not 15 years later.
Okay, so it would be common sense that you'd get that in writing.
Well, I'm not sure that I can characterize it as common sense, but it would make sense that if it's such an important statement, I would like to have it in writing, and I would like for my client to have it in writing.
Okay.
But it is also true that you can give a statement to the police without there being an agreement.
Yes.
But if there is an agreement about what can and can not happen with the statement given by the witness, that should be put in writing.
Okay.
I'm with you there.
Was my statement used against me?
Was your statement used against you after you testified, while you were testifying?
Was my statement used against me in the information forcing me to trial?
In the information or at the trial? I'm not sure which stage you're talking about.
It's called the charging information. It is the charging document from the prosecutor. Did Scott Leaders put my statement in there to force me to trial?
He put parts of it in there, yes.
Okay, so that's a yes. Was my statement used against me at trial in this map right here when I'm the one that put these marks on this map and they used against me at trial? Is that my statement being used against me at trial?
The answer to that question is obviously yes.
Yeah.
But again, let me point out to you, all of that is
obviously
part of
yes.
The
let
record.
Me write this down real quick. Obviously,
but,
yes.
Hey, all of that is what happened at trial is part of the trial record. So,
but see, the Court of Appeals doesn't want to deal with it, and this means my trial is invalid, and I know it, and Your Honor knows it, Chuck Robinson knows it, probably all these law enforcement officers know it also, and that's why David Hegg is so upset, because I have the proof that I was given an illegal trial. Everybody around me knew it except me, and it took me 15 years to figure it out. That's why I'm upset.
We're going to stop now, and again, let me advise you to try to prioritize what you believe is the most important information that is not currently in the record. And that's the witnesses, that's what you want your witnesses to focus on, the new information that you don't yet have in the record. All right?
Okay.
See you tomorrow morning. Have a good afternoon.
And thank you for being as forthright as you have been, Your Honor.
That's no one has ever called me forthright before, Mr. Hegg. I appreciate that. See you tomorrow.